Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
I have this approach avoidance thing about studies of animal cognition. On the one hand, I like the idea that the results of the studies compel at least some people to accept that animals are capable of higher thought processes. On the other hand, I don't like the way they go about it. Typically, what happens is somebody picks some item from the list of cognitive abilities that they've decided only humans have. How they came to decide this, I have no idea. But because it is a list composed by people, naturally it's based on human perception. Because of this, a lot of these studies involve cognitive abilities that are dependent on having detailed vision. And not only detailed vision, but also detailed vision over a long distance, just like we do, with or without the aid of glasses or contact lenses. And they also seem to assume that cognitive ability is dependent on trichromatic vision, vision in which the individual can see in shades of blue, green, and yellow, and all the variations thereof. Never mind the fact that there are colorblind people out there, some of them to a greater or lesser degree, and nobody questions their cognitive ability. But so it is. That's one of the first hurdles that animals who hope to prove that they have cognitive ability must surmount. They have to figure out how we perceive the world. The second hurdle is that animals have to learn how to signal to us that they perceive the way we do. And this is usually accomplished by teaching animals a proper response, typically using food rewards. Once that is in place, then the test begins. And if the animal passes the test, this is viewed as synonymous with the animal having great cognitive abilities. And depending on how one feels about animals having this, quote, human, unquote, skill, these results are greeted with great cheers or derision. What bothers me about the test is what I think of as a variation on the Clever-Hans effect. Clever-Hans was a horse who supposedly could count and even do simple mathematical problems. He would signal the correct answer by hitting the ground with his hoof. However, learned academics proved that this wasn't the case at all. Hans wasn't smart. All he had was the ability to read the most subtle body language cues that his owner subconsciously gave him when he approached the right answer. Does it strike you as strange as it does me that an animal with a capacity to do that, a capacity that exceeds that of probably at least half, if not most, of the human population, that an animal who can do that is considered stupider than an animal that just thumps out numbers with his hoof? And I feel the same way about these other tests. Here we have an animal who first has to figure out how the human researchers perceive their world. Then that animal has to learn their process for communicating that he is able to actually perceive the world like they do. And if he succeeds in doing this, then he is granted the ability to think, but only to think in the most elementary terms. Does that strike you as bizarre as it strikes me? Would any behavioral scientist even think to judge the intelligence of someone from a completely different culture by asking them to perform a task common to someone who lives in the metropolitan area of the United States? Just the thought of it is ludicrous. Not only ludicrous, but cruel. cruel and demeaning. We wouldn't do it. And yet we do this to animals all the time in our experiments. And worse, when they prove how much better their perception is, when they prove, as Clever Hans did, their ability to perceive the most subtle changes, we say they're not intelligent. To me, that's not an intelligent thing to say. To me, that sounds like something a person who's afraid to grant intelligence to animals would say. And all I can say is, I feel sorry for people like that.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.